What is the most powerful thing in the world? It's wisdom.
I thought it was love.
Silly you.
Silly me. That's what I tell my Marine son. So he won't get so brainwashed.
It's very interesting that you mention it, because there are meditation practices, and if you want a shortcut to wisdom, love it is. Loving kindness, compassion, when you do use those practices, it's a shortcut to wisdom. So, in fact, I would go to the extent of saying that loving kindness and compassion actually serves as the foundation for wisdom. It's the most favorable thing in cultivation of wisdom, but not a necessary thing. Most favorable, but not necessary. You could be living all by yourself away from civilization in the Himalayas or Alps, all by yourself, not having to practice loving kindness or compassion because nobody else is around, in a way. You can still cultivate wisdom, right? The wisdom of impermanence, the wisdom of impersonality. In my opinion, in fact, my experience suggests that love, and I want to be specific, when I say love, I mean loving kindness and compassion. Love perfects the wisdom, brings perfection to wisdom. And wisdom brings perfection to love. So practicing them parallelly, I think, is the best, in my opinion, the best practice.
Did you go see Rinpoche?
Ken Rinpoche.
Yeah, he says, on one hand we need love and compassion, on the other hand we need knowledge and wisdom, and that's what makes the wings of the bird fly.
I completely agree. I like to say, however, that wisdom is ultimately the thing, understanding.
I suppose you can't have love without good wisdom, and you can't have good wisdom without good love.
Right.
Or compassion.
Right.
My approach is, when I, you know, I hear these things and I read these things, but there came a point where I didn't really understand loving kindness. I didn't understand these things, wisdom. I could fake it, you know. I could think of a definition or whatever, but for me the approach is, all right, let it be shown to me, and maybe I'll understand it in a deeper way than just words. So I don't so much try to understand it. I mean, I did, but I found that to be a headache, a problem. So now it's like, okay, I want to understand this and let it happen. And so if you pay attention, little things happen. Mm-hmm. And it goes way beyond what you can define as love or define as wisdom, right?
Sure. What do you think?
About love and wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the words are familiar, and that, you know, I could define them on paper, but I don't think they're things I really understand in this kind of big sense we're talking about. I mean, maybe I could. It just doesn't seem quite accessible. I mean, kind of in that, I think if I thought about it, it would just give me. I mean, I have thought about it, and it, there's too many pieces that I just don't understand. But yeah, okay, actually, I think I do know. I mean, not in what the sense you're just talking about. Actually, I was thinking entirely differently. But it's maybe not in the big, but just the relationship between the two is. Just hearing about something awful or someone who's in, you know, you read about someone who's in prison for something just horrendous, and your kind of initial gut reaction, not even initial, but there's part of your mind that thinks, okay, yeah, these are awful, you know, and you demonize this person and they're not human. But then the wisdom part is actually being able to think, well, there's a reason for everything. Or cause and effect for everything. And so from that wisdom, then you get the love part that can understand no matter, you know, even if I won't want to have dinner with this person necessarily, they're still, you know, as much of a person as I am. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's the wisdom that initiates compassion. And the compassion strengthens your wisdom.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
There is a feedback loop between love and wisdom. Feedback, or they fuel each other, they strengthen each other. If we only practice love, then there is a possibility. I'm not saying it is, I'm not a deterministic person. There's a possibility that it could lead to selfish affection, or fondness, or even attachment. Right? But if there is wisdom, then all these near enemies, selfish affection, fondness, and attachment, they will not occur. Loving kindness will happen as loving kindness. Same with compassion. If there is wisdom, then you will not have sorrow or pity. Right? There's a tendency to have pity, right? When we see suffering. How do you avoid that pitfall? Or sorrow? Seeing somebody suffering, sorrow can arise. How we can avoid sorrow and pity so we can be compassionate? That happens because of wisdom.
I think pity is a bit of the opposite of kindness. Where kindness might be love in action. Pity is like not even love, but there's no action either.
Right. Mm-hmm. Same is with sorrow. Same is with sorrow. And I've done that myself, seeing a beggar in the railway station in India, and out of pity giving some money, versus out of compassion giving something. I have felt that difference, I think. Would you agree, or?
Mm-hmm. I do. I agree. It's Vivian, you know, the woman that I work for, she has taught me that too. She's a nutritionist, and she is around, you know, troubled people all the time. And she taught me to never pity these people, because that does not serve them, but to have compassion. And because compassion is different, pity is, I don't know, it's a very low vibration.
It doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel good.
But compassion is kind of an understanding.
Uplifting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that word. Mm-hmm. It's indeed uplifting. You literally feel that when you do a compassionate action.
Mm-hmm.
Good. ultimately, what's most important is the practice, the process, the meditation practice. What philosophy and these discussions do is they inspire us towards the practice.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. We conclude with the bell.